Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name's Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of November 15th, 2015. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing today, Mr. D.R. Tucker?
Good. How are you doing?
Great. Good to have you on board. So, D.R., in a recent show, we talked about the positive impact of the Keystone XL opposition movement that climate hawks have carried out for the last several years, the positive benefits of that in forming and shaping the climate movement. But now, you used a phrase before, I think you said it was the post-Keystone world that we're in. What did you mean by that?
By which I mean that the game has changed and now it's been proven that citizen activism can win. You're going to see much more citizen activism being used to sort of hasten the day where we get beyond fossil fuels and go towards a clean energy present and not just a clean energy future.
Oh, okay. A clean energy present. I like that. You're very good. You ought to, do you like put a little trademark after these phrases that you make up?
I want a clean energy present.
So speaking of clean energy present, let's start right here close to home, okay? Mm-hmm. If we're in a post-Keystone world where every project is now subject to the same kind of scrutiny that Keystone was, shall we say, mm-hmm. I think we said the Keystonification of every fossil fuel project. Tell me about what happened up in West Roxbury recently.
Well, yes, recently 15 protesters were arrested for blocking a work on the Spectra Energy fracked gas pipeline in West Roxbury. There have been a series of protests against this pipeline since the construction began, and especially on the heels of reports that the federal court's decision to allow the pipeline to go through will not mm-hmm. be appealed by the city of Boston. So people are essentially, there's essentially a citizen's appeal or perhaps a citizen's veto of this pipeline project, and people are basically saying, just as was the case with Keystone, that they would not stop until they won, that people are saying that these protests are going to continue until Spectra Energy basically realizes that they cannot win, that their pipeline is not wanted, and they pack up and go the hell home, basically.
But those protests at this point. So just so that if you don't live in Massachusetts or you're not familiar, West Roxbury is a suburb of Boston. It is highly dense area. It has this pipeline going through it near people's homes. And the protests against this are starting to look an awful lot, I don't know, across the country. They're almost, they look generic, right? There's people mm-hmm. there, they've got their signs, they're standing in front of a pipeline project. The West Roxbury protest, where you said 15 people were arrested recently? Did I get that
yes.
right?
Yes.
I mean, that's amazing. But it is happening in many, many places across the country that you may not hear about. But this mm-hmm. is when we say we're in a post-Keystone world, many people have awakened to the fact that they, in fact, can take action and have consequence by speaking their mind, right?
Mm-hmm. It goes to something Naomi Klein talked about in her book, This Changes Everything, about how the philosophy now is not here and not anywhere, not just not in my backyard, but people don't want dirty energy projects anywhere because, what's the old Martin Luther King line? Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And, if somebody's property isn't being damaged by these projects, somebody else's property is, and people want to say, this stuff has to stop. You cannot go further than this point. So that's why they're standing out there and getting arrested and basically making it clear that they're not going to stop until Spectra Energy rethinks their priorities, basically.
And I think it's not just in West Roxbury. I mean, there are so even in Massachusetts, little tiny Massachusetts, there are two significant pipeline projects that have been proposed that we should note, right? One is the Northeast Direct that's going to go across the northern part of the state, and the other is, it goes by various names, but I think it most often uses the Algonquin pipeline. And if, again, if you're not from Massachusetts, the Algonquin were one of the original original inhabitants of this area, the Algonquin tribe. So now we're going to name a pipeline after them. But anyway, that's a whole other story. There's this pipeline through the southern part of the state. In fact, right here in the town I live in, just today, there was a group of citizens went to the town council to oppose the pipeline that would run through this town. So this is a real deal, and these people are self-starters, right? And it's a great thing. This is the post-Keystone world, right?
Exactly, and it's been proven that you can win if you band together, if you stand and fight, and if you never give up. It has been proven that you can score a victory, and a big victory.
Right. So we have that. That's one aspect of, life after Keystone. The other thing that is either coincidental or, I don't know, who knows if it's coincidental or not, but it's the fact of these, all of a sudden Exxon is being in legal jeopardy for the things it has said, right? And you were talking before about, what's the latest on the, aside from the fact, forgive me, dear, let me answer part of my own question, Peabody Coal, I think, has signed an agreement that they screwed up? I mean, someone sued them?
Yes, this is the resolution of a case involving Peabody Coal and the New York State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman. Basically, as part of the deal, the Peabody Coal will agree to change the way they report risks to investors by climate change. They had basically been under investigation by New York State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman. According to The Guardian, the company was accused of issuing misleading statements on the risks it could face from laws, demanding curbs in carbon pollution. Previously, Peabody, according to The Guardian, had argued it was unable to predict the impacts of future policy on its revenues, even though it had made internal projections that regulations could hit the business. Peabody has agreed to amend its disclosures, according to The Guardian, but insisted it has not admitted any wrongdoing and faces no financial penalty. So essentially, Peabody Coal is part of this agreement.
But Peabody blinked. And yes. If you don't know, Peabody is a seriously big coal company, right? There's Peabody Coal, and then the other one is Arch Coal, I think. But these are companies not quite on the scale of Exxon. You don't hear about it very much, but they're enormous. So in the Exxon case, so we spoke last few shows, Exxon is now being sued by the New York Attorney General for basically what amounts to deception of its shareholders by not talking about climate, right?
Exactly. And there was a great discussion on a recent edition of the broadcast with Brad Friedman, with a lady by the name of Sharon Eubanks, I believe her name is, who was the lead prosecutor in the federal government's case against the tobacco industry. And her and Sharon Eubanks basically made the point that, this is going to come down to essentially whether or not a corporation has a legal right to lie, or if a corporation's lies constitute fraud. And if they do constitute fraud, then obviously Exxon is going to be in some pretty big trouble. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. And obviously Bill McKibben has said that, that this is something that climate activists need to focus on, the fact that ExxonMobil knew full well what the risks were of its product and then basically launched this heavily financed effort to sort of stop any sort of policy action. And in fact, recently on PBS NewsHour, Ken Cohen, who's the PR flack for ExxonMobil, essentially admitted that that's what ExxonMobil did. He acknowledged that they financed all these denial organizations, and they acknowledged that they tried to stop the Kyoto Protocol, stop the United States from ratifying Kyoto, which they did, and they tried to stop the Waxman-Markey bill, which they did. So, if the suspect admits his guilt, then at some point, don't you just move to a finding of guilty, basically?
We can only hope. So the Exxon has its issues. I guess the question is, for Climate Hawk, right? He's looking at the New York State Attorney General. He doesn't have much influence over, Right. So what should a good climate hawk do in the instance of trying to further the cause of court cases against the oil industry?
Well, they can, as McKibben suggests, join the call to have Attorney General Loretta Lynch.
The U.S. Federal Attorney General, right?
Yes, launch an investigation of ExxonMobil. Sheldon Whitehouse, Senator of Rhode Island, has called for federal investigations of other fossil fuel companies who may have done the same thing. So obviously, you know, if there's one entity that's theoretically more powerful than the fossil fuel industry, it's the U.S. Justice Department. So we'll see how that plays out.
Right. So basically, it's still, quote-unquote, political how many other legal cases come, and climate hawks can add their voice to the call for that. And just in a related note, we saw that the Massachusetts Attorney General again has gone out of her way to provide an affidavit supporting the president's clean power plan, right?
Yes, she is one of 18 state attorney generals who filed an affidavit supporting the Clean Power Plan and seeking to intervene in a case by various industry groups in various coal and oil states trying to basically kill the Clean Power Plan. I believe, again, Eric Schneiderman is also one of the attorney generals defending the Clean Power Plan in this lawsuit as well. So
he's a busy guy.
Exactly. So
that and killing DraftKings. Right.
Exactly. So it is interesting to see Attorney General Healey join you know, this effort to defend the Clean Power Plan. Obviously, the Clean Power Plan was born of the Massachusetts versus EPA ruling, in which I believe it was then Attorney General. Your memory may be better than mine.
I think it was Martha Coakley.
Martha Coakley. Okay.
Led the case. That is now the historic case of called Massachusetts versus EPA that forced the Supreme Court to allow the EPA, basically require the EPA to regulate carbon, which is the fundamental basis of the Clean Power Plan that Obama has proposed. Exactly. My point being that sort of public pressure on these officials does tell. And if you're interested in that aspect of it, it's a way to take action. So we're talking about the post Keystone world here. We'll have to call it the PKW, the post Keystone world. On the front page of the Boston Globe this past week, there was a big splash that said a Danish wind turbine company, which goes by the acronym DONG, and I assume they're called Dong, DONG. They're proposing a rather large offshore wind turbine project well south of Martha's Vineyard in Cape Cod, 15 to 20 miles out to sea, right? Did you see that?
Yes. Yes, it was a great story. Basically, as you know, it's going to be 15 miles south of Martha's Vineyard. And the interesting angle of the story is that the same front group that attacked the Cape Wind project is basically saying that, well, we don't have a problem with this project at all. It's not going to be visible to anybody. But considering the ideological forces aligned against wind power, you have to wonder if one of those ideological forces will then try to take a hatchet to this project as well and try to tie it up in various, you know, nonsensical legal challenges, as we saw over the past 15 years with Cape Wind. So it's going to be interesting to see if that potential attack can be thwarted, because as Ann Berwick, who's a former energy official in the Patrick administration, noted that, you know, with the Pilgrim nuclear plant going offline, you're going to need offshore wind to basically, you know, provide some degree of leverage and some degree of power for your state, especially, you know, in terms of all the controversy about Governor Baker trying to basically, you know, get more hydropower. He needs to have something else in his arsenal besides hydropower. And that's going to be offshore wind.
To put that whole thing in context, right? We've said that, the story is that Massachusetts has the Global Warming Solutions Act, which requires us to reduce carbon emissions by a set amount by the year 2020. And part of the governor's plan to do that was to purchase power from Hydro-Quebec up in Canada, which of course had a lot of discussion about it. But then in the midst of that discussion of trying to buy Hydro-Quebec power at something like 18 cents a kilowatt hour, the Pilgrim nuclear plant gets the vapors, right? And they just and they say, okay, we're going out of business in 2 years, which takes another enormous power source out of the grid. So now the governor is really faced with a challenge, right? He has to. And the people at Hydro-Québec know full well the governor's in a bind, right? He's got to buy power somewhere. And so you think the governor would be jumping up and down supporting an enormous wind turbine project off the coast of Massachusetts that would give him some leverage with the Hydro-Québec people, right?
Exactly, exactly. And we should note how skillfully Ann Berwick attacked that argument that you often hear from Baker administration officials about the alleged intermittent nature of solar and wind power. And she notes that, quote, there's a big difference between solar and wind in Massachusetts. Solar power is available only about 15% of the time, but the newest offshore wind plants in Europe operate about 50% of the time, and our coast is one of the windiest places in the world. So in other words, she's basically saying that this whole argument about the alleged intermittent nature of wind and solar is complete nonsense, right. And it's logical and irrational for Baker to keep on saying it.
And I think just one last point about the Danish DONG company. And it's very interesting. It's a contrast to the Cape Wind thing. So Dong, DONG, has put in a bunch of big turbine projects off the coast of Europe into waters that are much like the waters off of Massachusetts. And most importantly, the Danish company, the Dutch company, Dong, I'll somehow get that word right eventually. They have deep pockets, right? They can build this thing for several billion dollars without borrowing anything from anybody, right? And that's different from what poor Jim Gordon at Cape Wind. He had to get the financing. So he was always trying to keep, you know, pedaling along, trying to get his investors on board while all this craziness was going on with David Koch, right? And so finally that started to fall apart. But the DONG people, they got money. They sound very confident. They know how to build this. They got the money. They just need permission, right? What they need from the state of Massachusetts is a commitment to buy the electricity, right?
Yes.
Then it goes through.
Exactly, exactly. I was going to the point that David Roberts of Vox made, that, you know, as clean energy begins to become more prominent, you're going to be seeing clean energy companies beginning to become this sort of fiscal powerhouses that can presumably push past efforts to try to sabotage clean energy projects. So in other words, Dong might be able to fight back successfully against efforts to try to prevent this new project from going through, and that would be a great thing to see. We need to have some steel in the water, as they say. Could be getting close to that point.
So we're running out of time. I did want to just mention one last concept in the, you know, in the world after Keystone. It's my personal feeling that the next big, symbolic, easily understood, good guy, bad guy story that the climate hawks can tell is about fossil fuels on federal lands, right? And the obvious fact that the federal government should not be subsidizing companies to drill on federally owned land and extract coal and natural gas. Just shouldn't happen. And the federal government can pretty much stop that. We assume Mr. Obama has lots of leverage there. I don't really know the legal niceties, but just keep your eyes open. Extraction on federal lands, I think, will be a very big issue going forward for climate hawks.
Yes, and there was a great op-ed by Lydia Millett in the New York Times, in which she noted that President Obama already has authority under the Mineral Leasing Act and the Federal Land Policy and Management Act to essentially stop any leasing of fossil fuels on public land. So in fact, you know, she makes reference to the Keep It in the Ground bill that Senators Jeff Merkley of Oregon and Bernie Sanders of Vermont introduced. And she said that even if that bill fails, Obama still has the ability legally to stop, leasing on public lands of fossil fuels. So therefore, you know, all it takes is another act of political will, and people are going to have to push him to make that act of political will to basically say, you know, to basically put a stop to this.
So, climate hawks, sharpen up your talons. We've got a target. We can go after the next problem. So, DR, we got to leave it there. Let our listeners go back to their daily tasks. they can check out, or you can check out, links to most of what we've discussed at our blog. It's massclimateaction.net/blog. And one word, massclimateaction.net/blog. It brings you right to the blog page. You can listen to the podcast there. You can find us on Facebook at /massclimateaction. Share us there. You can make a comment there. You can make a comment on the blog. Let us know what you think and what we ought to be talking about. You can listen to our show directly on your cell phone using Stitcher or TuneIn Radio. You can find us on iTunes, and with all of the power that gives you, just search for Massachusetts Climate Action. We're there, trust me. So, DR, we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and because we believe it is our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States put a price on carbon. So thank you very much, DR, for being here.
Thanks.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We really appreciate it. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.